So everybody knows, you know, when you sleep better, you feel better, you're in a better mood, you're a better person, you have less chance of making errors, you know, you are more kinder, you know, because you're healed in your sleep. You know, you have conflict resolution, memory consolidation, learning, retention.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast. It's the weekly show that brings you inspiring interviews with MDs, CEOs, and genuine subject matter experts from around the globe, all designed to help you be the very best leader you can possibly be. It's my gift to you, and it's absolutely free. Today's episode is a thought leader episode featuring Dr. Bijoy John. And in today's episode, we are exploring a topic that is very close to my own heart, which is sleep and the importance of getting a good night's sleep. Dr. John is a board-certified sleep physician and the founder of the Sleep Center of Greater Pittsburgh. He's also the author of a new book, Nobody's Sleeping. More specifically, though, in this episode, you will learn how to overcome some of the factors that contribute to poor sleep, such as stress and technology, for example. We look at the consequences of sacrificing sleep, both in the short and long term, whether it's worth using wearable tech to track and measure your sleep, and perhaps most significantly, Dr. John's 7 proven strategies for getting a better night's sleep. And if you find this episode does resonate with you and this is a topic that's piqued your interest, then do also, when you're done, check out episode 47 featuring a friend of mine, Professor Greg Wells, where we talk in more depth about sleep, exercise, and nutrition. I've popped a link to that episode in the show notes for you, so you don't need to go hunting for it yourself. That is enough by way of an introduction, though, so let's dive right in to today's episode and my conversation with Dr. Bijoy John. Bijoy, a very warm welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us today, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation because sleep is something I'm incredibly passionate about. So let's dive straight in with one of the big fundamental questions. What is sleep?
Great question. You know, I think nature has given this opportunity for us to rest. You know, we are a supercharged computer, you know, big processes going on, but it needs its own time to recharge. I think if it was not there, it would not have happened to us, right? So the moment we wake up, we begin to feel sleepy and it builds up and there's the yin and the yang. You know, nighttime, you feel sleepy, daytime, you're awake. That's a beautiful, simple yet most complicated biorhythm that happens. And sleep is the superpower. We would not have had this within ourselves if it was not meant to serve the right purpose of healing, growing, learning, and resting and recharging.
So your new book, I believe the title is Why No One's Sleeping, is that right?
Nobody's Sleeping.
Nobody's Sleeping. Sorry, I do apologize. So linked to that, just then you was talking about this wonderful yin and yang. As the sun starts going down, we feel sleepy, and as the sun rises, we should feel awake. But that's not the reality for so many of us right now, is it? So what's going on? What's getting in the way, and what's changed?
I really believe the hustle culture has met its match in sleep, right? We hustle our way into everything, but sleep is ancient. It's an art. You can't hustle your way. You can't data mine your way. We all need data. We all are hustling and doing everything we can to better ourselves. But unfortunately, sleep is not that way. It's just the opposite of the hustle culture. I think it's an art, but in the process of trying to better ourselves, we have lost that art, and we have many, many things that are bothering us. You know, I'm sure everybody knows the use of the cell phones, the pandemic, the workload, the stress, the geopolitical climate we live in. All those play into sleep. And unfortunately, we compromise the most important basic human function to achieve those things. You know, sleep is the foundation. January comes, everybody makes a resolution for fitness and weight, but you know, sleep is the foundation on those, you know, the other, you know, things are built. But unfortunately, we compromise the most powerful function we have.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk to me about a New Year's resolution to get more sleep or go to bed earlier, do they? It is fascinating how it is one of the most fundamental, is it a human need? But at the same time, it is one that we compromise so much and don't prioritize, isn't it? It's something that definitely has gone wrong somewhere along the way, hasn't it?
Correct. You know, we pay a price. You know, for example, you know, all of us have found our new best friend, which is our cell phones or these devices, and we want to be connected. We want to be heard. We want to know. We want to communicate. But what are we doing? Where does that extra time comes from? You know, you have to come to work. You have to take care of your children. And maybe you have time to work, but we compromise on sleep. You know, we need about 7 to 8 hours. Of sleep, but then the extra hours that we are finding to be on our the curiosity of empowering ourselves, we compromise on it. So that's what's gone wrong.
Yeah, and you said 7 to 8 hours there. Is that still the optimal number for most adults? Is that right?
Correct. So, you know, teens need 8 to 10, you know, preschool children need more. And then, of course, babies need more. But in a general rule, 7 to 8 hours is a good number, because we have many cycles and stages in our sleep. To get the optimal ratio of all that, you know, we need to have that many hours of sleep. There are a few people who have won the genetic lottery, like Elon Musk. He doesn't sleep much, you know, but he recently went on TV and said, hey, you know, I can do it, but not many can do so. He himself focuses on sleep. So the good news, Ben, here, most people are becoming aware of this, you know, this power. And there's more talk now than ever before.
Yeah. And if we want to give people a little bit of the odds around that genetic sleep lottery, am I right in thinking it's only something like 3% of the global population have got the gene that means they can sleep less? It's very small, right?
Very, very small. You know, these people, they can sleep like 4 to 5 hours and they get their correct amount of ratio, and then they are able to be supercharged. But all of us go through different cycles in our sleep, and each cycle is about, you know, 90 to 120 minutes long. And, you know, we have about 5 to 6 of that.
Yeah. And then we've spoken already, I mentioned a couple of times, the fact that many of us are compromising sleep, but at what cost? What is the cost to us when we do sleep less than that 7 to 8 hours? And I'm particularly interested in the cost for someone in a leadership position, or let's say a knowledge worker who is going to work and they are employed to use their brain to solve complex problems and challenges, or be creative. What impact is it really having on us?
I learned very early on, you know, I struggled with insomnia in med school. You know, nobody sleeps, everybody is high on caffeine. But, you know, when I pull an all-nighter and take an exam, I'm less, my scores are less. I said, I have to figure something out. So early on, I dedicated an hour prior to my examination date. I slept, started sleeping more and just be done, and actually scored more. So I said, hey, you know, my memory consolidation and learning and retention is much better if I sleep 7 to 8 hours rather than 1 or 2 hours or no sleep. So I learned that. See, sleep problems don't hurt like a toothache, so we don't pay attention to it. We can pay the ultimate price over a period of time. You know, people are having, you know, mental fog, you're at risk for dementia, the cardiovascular impact. You know, our blood pressure is high right now, we are in a conversation or doing things, but at night we kind of everything simmers down. down, you know, that your system is at rest. But what happens when you have sleep disorders, when you don't sleep, you know, that system is revved up. And of course, you have uncontrolled blood pressure, uncontrolled diabetes. All that will affect your, you know, you can pay the ultimate price. In 2021, in the United States, the cost of not showing up at work because of sleep problems was $411 billion. So not to mention the errors that they've created. So,
yeah, wow. And what are some of the things that people listening then can do to try and help them get sufficient quality sleep? So let's say for argument, someone is now totally convinced that they need to get between 7.5 to 8 hours sleep per night, but they struggle to unwind, to fall asleep, maybe because of insomnia or some other reason. What are some of the things that people can practically do so that they can sleep well, feel rested, and then go to work and perform the next day?
So I formed these 7 proven sleep strategies. I mean, I can go all of them. I want to. That's the subtitle of my book. So what I did, I just did an acronym for that. So if your viewers are listening, it's called Sleep Now, SLEEPNOW. So I can start going, you know, one by one if you are ready, Ben.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So the first S in the Sleep Now acronym is the schedule. We need to have a schedule. So 10 to 6 a.m., 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., I tell people to dedicate to sleep. But what's happening is if somebody cannot sleep when they go to bed at 10 and they fall asleep at 11:30, what do? They start going to bed earlier, trying to get sleep. But now you're struggling for 3 hours, then you grab hold of your phone, and you're just frustrated. You know, my one of the sleep experts that I look to is Matthew Walker. He said, you don't sit in your dining chair and get hungry. You know, you go there hungry. So what I tell people, you need to go to bed. If you fell asleep at 11:30, you need to go to closer to hit your bed at 11:30 p.m. And then, but you have to wake up at 6. You know, I'm trying to create a sleep debt.
Got you.
So once that 11:30 to 6 a.m., now you're sleeping 6.5 hours, then you slowly move your clock forward by 15 minutes, 11:15, till you get to 7 or 8 hours of sleep. So, all right, this is very important. This is called sleep restriction. The first few days, they call my office and they're angry with themselves and angry at me. But I've helped hundreds and thousands of patients over the course of 25 years of my experience. And, you know, me being, you know, I prioritize that. So the next one is the L in the acronym is low light, low noise, low temperature. This is also absolutely needed because melatonin, the hormone that we have within ourselves, is only secreted in darkness and low temperatures. And of course, noise is hindrance to our sleep rhythm. So melatonin means darkness. So it had, the room has to be dark and also has to be cold. So that's the beauty of that. So the next is my favorite in the acronym E is electronics. Man, we're all best friend. It's my own best friend. Unfortunately, what happened with, I mentioned earlier, that's one of the reasons, not only the electronics, what happens, the coronavirus changed the whole way how we work. You know, we work from home. Then you take the computer and bring it to all your phones into your bedroom. So every time you're on your phone in the bedroom and there's no ambient light, it's more powerful, right? It goes into the eyes and tells the brain, hey, it's still daytime, there's no need to go to sleep. Remember, melatonin only secretes in the darkness. And then you have your phone next to you, there's a ding and the notification, and then you accidentally wake up in the night, wow, it's only 3 o'clock. Oh, it is 3 o'clock. See the rumination and the cognitive activity. You know, I keep my phone in my bathroom next to me. I have an alarm for 6, and I have literally wake up, I don't hit the snooze button, I wake up, turn it off, and I'm done, I'm ready for the day to begin. So this is, I tell people, we are all addicts, including myself. How do you know you're an addict? The first thing you do when in the morning, if you're going to pick up a phone to see what's up, then you are an addict.
Yeah.
So we are all cell phone addicts, you know, especially now with my release of my book. Every morning I'm seeing what's the ranking of my book, what's people saying about it. I think I'll get over it in a minute. So that's the E, the very important thing. So the next E is the exercise. You know, exercise generates heat. Remember, melatonin only secretes in, you know, when the body temperature is lower. So when you exercise 4 hours prior to going to sleep, you have the, you know, endorphins and also the body heat. So that's not good. The ideal time to do exercises in the morning, but if you can't, if you're in the evening, try to be done by 6 p.m. if you're planning to go to bed at 10 p.m. So SLEEP, the next is the P. This is where I have given the new techniques for people. Most people say, I've heard this, I've heard that. But hear me out. P is powering off your mind. So I teach two techniques. One is called vivid imagination. When you're in bed, bedroom is only for, you know, sex and sleeping in that order. But most people are either worrying or they're snoring. So what happens is, I don't want reality in your bedroom. I want you to think about the show that you saw, or a cricket match, what's going to happen tomorrow. You just become the director or the player or whatever in that program. And then you don't want to bring anything to bedroom. I've been doing this for 30 years. It works great. I'm probably the first guy to promote this as a technique to sleep. It works great. And then the next is yogic sleep. I tell everybody to lay down with your palms up and then look at the ceiling and start focusing from your scalp down to your chest muscles, the face muscles, and all the way down. So you're relaxing. This is the, you know, muscle relaxation technique of cognitive behavior of insomnia. But remember, you can only calm your mind by calming your body. Remember, I told not to exercise. Remember, I told not to have anybody the phone next to you. So yeah. You have to have this sequence of events. You know, it's an art. We want sleep to be an on and off switch, but it only works as a dimmer.
Yeah.
All right. The next is N-O, no to worries. You know, we all worry. I worry. We have to. Probably you don't worry much, Ben. I'm just teasing. So I tell people to worry between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Dedicated worrying time, right? That's the time, you know, I'm preparing for a show. I made sure I had your link yesterday. You know, I'm done at 8 p.m. I'm preparing for my 10. So worry outside the bedroom. I always tell people, when you're entering your bedroom, it's like the airport security scanner. You're going into your bedroom with your phone, beep. You're going in,
love that.
Into your bedroom with your worries, beep. You're worrying, going there with a tight, you know, belts, and you want to have comfortable clothes, beep. So I'm just saying that should be your marker. Hey, where am I? It's a lot in my mind. You go outside, you know, and resolve that and come back. So the last is win. W in the acronym is win by losing. You know, we win in the hustle culture, but unfortunately, sleep, you have to lose yourself, keep your routine simple. So this is the exact 7 strategies of you know, I even have a Sleep Now course on my website. So SLEEPNOW. I've helped myself, my family, hundreds and thousands of patients over my years. I've perfected. It's taken me 25 years to do this, you know. And so I just want to share it with the world to answer the question.
Yeah, so there's so many questions I want to dive in and ask you. To the L, it was low temperature, low light, low noise. So is any one of those more significant? And this is quite a granular question. So let's say the room's quite hot, so we want to put a fan on, but the fan is going to create noise. Are we better to have a cool but noisy room, or a quiet but hot room, or are those three elements all relatively equal?
So I think of all the things, you know, it's the darkness is the most important thing, right? So background noise is good. People have noise cancellation machine. I always sleep with my fan on all my life. That's my soothing, you know, some kind of keep the circulation.
Like white noise.
Yeah, white noise. So noise, but remember, when you are by the railway tracks or a busy interstate and then you're not rest, you know, your body is taking those cues from the outside. And you know, because the more deeper you are going, that's more the deeper sleep. But the noise kind of keeps you up in, you know, stage 1 or stage 2 of sleep. So among all that, I would say the darkness is the most important thing.
Okay. And in terms of light as well, I mean, that's something that many people are aware of now, especially blue light from devices. And as you said, there's two elements to staring at your device before bed, right? There's one piece, which is it puts you in work mode and creates worry. And then the other one is the actual light. But sort of what should we be doing to mitigate that? So for example, I personally will, and I'm pretty good at this, try and make sure an hour before I'm going to sleep, my phone is put away. We bought a little foam bed from Arianna Huffington's website. So my wife and I and my daughter, we tuck our phones into their bed downstairs. They stay there when we go up to bed. But after I put my phone away, I might still, what I normally do, sit on the sofa and watch a show on TV before we head up to bed. So is that okay? Or is even light from a TV bad for us?
You know, 25 or 20 years ago, I used to say TV is not good for you before bed. See, the between the two, I like your idea. I did the same with my kids. We all had a basket where we have a charger and put it all in there. So the parents have to do, children are going to follow what the parents are doing.
Yeah.
Here we are trying to, you know, practice with what we preach. But the difference here, and also make sure your TV is not in your bedroom. So when you watch TV, there's ambient light and it's far, it's not close. And you know, you sometimes see things you really want to see, like, you know, comedy show, it puts you in a different mode. But the cell phone, you know, bad things come, you know, people wanting something from you, or, you know, they worry that somebody may not like your post and you're all upset now. So it creates the emotion. But between the two, I like TV outside the bedroom. That's perfectly all right before going to bed.
Quick one for you. If you are somebody like me who really does want to sleep well so that you can perform in work the next day and live a long, healthy life, then my sleep timeline will be really helpful. As someone who has struggled with sleep over the years, I have researched it and studied it a great deal. And what I found was I was struggling to make sense of all of the information I was gathering and learning. So I did what the army taught me and did some planning using a timeline. So I created my optimal sleep timeline, where I simply work back from the time that I want to wake up to help me understand what time to go to bed and all of the different things I should be doing or not doing at certain times in the day leading up to that. I don't use it every night, but I do use it when I really need to sleep well because I've got a big day the next day and it has worked wonders for me. Do check it out via the link in the show notes, folks. Back to the episode though. So we've talked about tech and kind of tech not being in the bedroom. Earlier on, you also mentioned sort of data and this hustle culture. When we spoke ahead of recording this episode, you said something that really sort of piqued my interest, which was not everything needs to be measured. So again, there are some people who are getting really into trying to sleep well and they love their tech, so they might be going to bed with some sort of wearable on, be it their smartwatch, kind of a ring that tracks your sleep. Like, what are your thoughts on all of these sleep tracking and data gathering devices that we're being sold?
That's the number one cause of recent people call my office to see me in person. Hey, my sleep is not good. I don't have stage 2 sleep or stage 3 sleep or REM sleep. Remember, Ben, you know, when you are in the weight loss program, what do the coaches tell you? Don't weigh yourself every day. Only weigh yourself, you know, in 30 days or 60 days when you're
met. Yeah, yeah.
Even last night, I had the mistake of jumping on my scale, and I was like lower. So what did I do? I went and ate a big dessert, which I would not have done, right? So it doesn't work. So again, with sleep, oh, I need to get more REM sleep tonight and then the next day morning. But there's fundamentally something wrong with these variables, because you quantify sleep with your brain waves.
Yeah.
So this one gets the movement, so it's not accurate. So it's a rough. So where is the compromise? You know, always we have to find a compromise. I tell people to get a baseline and then do something about it. And then same watch, same company, you know, everything is in a different, you know. And then after you implement that, try to see it. Right. So every day looking at it, it's not going to change, you know, change the data mining is not going to change it. And so get a baseline, implement the strategy, and then see if it works. Daily looking at it and worrying will invariably make you sleep less on the data that's not accurate.
Yeah, that really resonates with my experience. So over the years, I've tried using various sleep tracking devices, like my Garmin watch. At one point, it was a Fitbit type device. And a few things happened. One is I'd find it would interrupt my sleep because I'd roll over and the feeling of the watch or the band pressing against my skin would wake me up. So I'm like, oh, this isn't good. It's not even comfy getting to sleep. And then there'd be days where I would wake up and immediately I'd feel quite rested and I'd look at the data and it would tell me, to your point, like I didn't get that much REM sleep or deep sleep. And then I'd talk myself out of feeling rested because I go, well, the data says I didn't sleep well, so I couldn't have. And then again, to your point, you go to sleep that night kind of worrying about it. So in the end, I did do exactly what you've recommended, actually. I put in place some strategies, then ditched all the devices and stopped measuring it, because I think we can generally just tell intuitively, right, by how we feel how well we've slept, which is good enough for most of us, I think.
So it depends on how, then if you spend majority of their sleep in REM sleep, you know, there's this big misconception is REM sleep is not the restorative, you know, it's actually good for, you know, conflict resolution, but it's not a restful sleep. So if you sleep 7 hours and you're spending 5 hours in REM sleep, you're not going to be rested the next day, right? So how you feel depends on stage three, you know, deep sleep, most of it. So that's the deep, sweet sleep, I call it. To answer your question, you made the perfect statement. How you feel the next day is how well you did the night before. Remember, there's no EEG. They're not monitoring the brain waves. So you have inaccurate data and you're steering in the wrong way. So I am not a fan for that variables.
Yeah. Bijoy, what about two of what are probably the most common drugs that most people link with sleep? And by that, I mean alcohol and caffeine, right? So many people might use alcohol because they think it will help them fall asleep. But then if they don't sleep well, they'll caffeinate themselves to counteract the tiredness the next day. Where do both of those two drugs factor into sleeping well?
So when people have that behavior, I said, you are my celebrity clients. That's what I have. That was some of my celebrity clients. They want something to go to sleep, something to wake up, to be energetic. So see, with the moment we wake up, there's a chemical called adenosine. You know, that's what builds up, puts you to sleep. And caffeine is anti-adenosine, right?
Okay.
So that's how the mechanism of action is. So caffeine lasts for about 4 to 6 hours. But in vulnerable people, it can last up to 12 hours. So it can, and also caffeine is also a, you know, diuretic. Same thing with tea. People say sleepy time tea. Well, it is a diuretic, you know. So I've altered people's favorite habit. So if you're drinking caffeine to stay awake, then you have a sleep debt or a sleep problem, right? If you're taking caffeine or tea just as enjoyment, then you're enjoying, you know, caffeine. There's a lot of benefits of caffeine and tea. So I'm a fan of one cup of coffee or one, you know, sip of tea. So that's very good. Alcohol, on the same thing, it anesthetizes the brain, right? So it's not sleep. It's just drowning your brain, you know. And then what happens? Alcohol metabolizes into acetaldehyde and then you wake up. And also alcohol is a diuretic. So you're dehydrated and this chemical buildup in your body, the end product of, you know, alcohol metabolism. Now you are in a hangover. Now you wonder why you're hangover. So some people do take alcohol to go to sleep, unfortunately, because you have that. Then they don't have restful sleep. You know, it messes up with your, you know, sleep pattern and also wakes you up. So I do not recommend either alcohol to go to bed or caffeine to stay awake.
Yeah. And just on the diuretic piece there, I think that's probably a term that most people have heard about. My understanding of a diuretic is something that will dehydrate you. But what's the specific linkage between diuretics and sleep then?
So when your bladder is full, you have to use the restroom. So you're waking up.
Okay.
Right. So that's why you try not to drink a lot of fluids, you know. So the diuretic wakes you up. So because you have to wake up, you know, already you are a poor sleeper. And then, God forbid, you're going to look at the clock or the phone. Hey, what's going on, Joe? Hey, what's going on? You know, so you see what I'm saying? Your chances to mess up your sleep, don't give that a chance by avoiding all these things closer to bedtime.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense, and probably most people can relate to that, right? Where we've had those moments where you're lying in bed and you really need to get up to use the bathroom, but you're all cozy in bed, so you think, oh, I'll be all right, I'll just fall back to sleep. And then you lie there probably for 40 minutes in discomfort, not quite sleeping, and it gets worse and worse and worse, right?
So when you decide just use the restroom, I call people to keep the sleep shape, keep the shape, come back to bed. You know, we all wake up, but then don't give that, you know, I call it, don't peer out of your shape, you know, then looking elsewhere, looking at the clock, don't do all that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another really important reason why keeping the phones away from the bedroom or bathroom is really key, right? Because to your point around many of us, I was going to say all, but that's not fair, many of us being addicted to our phone, like the attraction and draw that they have is huge, right? So if you do wake up in the night, you need to use the bathroom. For so many people, like, they just can't resist that temptation to, oh, as soon as I'm awake, I'll just check Instagram or whatever. And then boom, you're all fired up and struggling to get back to sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're trying to eliminate the process. You know, it's not easy to go from, you know, 60 to zero. You have to go down. So that's why you're giving your chance. You know, first I gave the chance not having anything, calm your body, then calm your mind. But if your mind is constantly, it's already, you know, I tell people, I describe insomniacs as somebody who had 3-4 cups of caffeine. There's a little fire in them that they're not able to turn off, and even a little bit of flame lights it up, you know, meaning any external distraction. So you are trying to avoid as many of those distractions as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Bijoy, what are some of the things related to sleep that you think people still aren't talking about? I do think, and if you excuse the pun, there's a bit of a waking up to the importance of sleep in recent years, and people are starting to talk about it a little more and understand it. And I think the hustle culture of work, work, work is now starting to get a fairly strong counter argument. What do you think, from your experience, are some of the things that people still aren't talking about or perhaps realizing in relation to sleep?
So everybody knows, you know, when you sleep better, you feel better. You are in a better mood. You're a better person. You have less chance of making errors. You know, you are more kinder, you know, because you're healed in your sleep. You know, you have conflict resolution, memory consolidation, learning, retention, and all that. You know, even the title of my book, Nobody's Sleeping, came in the morning I woke up. It was like, wow, you know. So a lot of good things. You know, of course, not to talk about dreaming. It's so spiritual. How can you not dream when you don't sleep well? So the good news is everybody's talking about it. And my hope, you know, in this message that I'm trying to give is start here. Let there be, you know, like a triangle, you know, diet, exercise, and sleep. Let's focus. But if you look at, you know, most popular athletes, you know, and they know what sleep is. They all focus on it, right? The CEOs and more, you know, people in key positions, they have to struggle to get there. Once they reach there, they're turning everybody off. I see a lot of celebrities now giving off their phones. I turn off my phone at 7 p.m. every night. I'm hard at it from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. But I turn it off. I'm done.
Yeah, so I don't fully turn it off, but mine is automatically set to go on to sort of do not disturb mode from 9 p.m. till 7 a.m. And the only way it will ring is so people who are saved as favorites in my contacts. If there's an issue with a family member, they can get hold of me. I've done that for years, which is really powerful actually, because I just know it's not going to ping or ring, and it just will not disturb me and pop me back into work mode when I'm trying to relax.
Yes. Yeah, so like I said, you know, it's a superpower we have, and our brains are like a supercomputer. It needs some time off. Otherwise, the battery is going to run out. Mm-hmm. So people say, I'm going to sleep when I die. I tell people, hey, if you're on that path, you might really happen. You know, you're wilting away. You know, I can spot an insomniac from far away. The skin's not good. You know, their mood's not good. They're irritable. You don't want to be around them. But you know, a person who's well rested, you know, they're ready to go.
Yeah.
So And that's why we I appreciate you having me on my show, and then we are able to spread this good news, which has been compromised.
Yeah. Bijoy, one penultimate question that something you said just triggered in my mind, which I've never really thought about before. You mentioned dreaming. Is there any sort of linkage between dreaming and quality of sleep? Like if we wake up and don't remember any dreams, does that tell us anything? If we're waking up and remembering dreams vividly, does that tell us anything about how well we've slept? What are the headlines there, perhaps, if there are any?
We dream in all stages of our sleep, but most in REM sleep, you know. That's when, you know, the dreams are the subconscious, you know, I don't like my boss, you know, you create that, you know, subconscious thought, and then you have some resolution in your sleep. I have a few, a percentage of patients who act out their dreams. That's a dangerous, you know, where they punch their spouse or they run and they fall down. You know, that's a dangerous condition. So vivid dreams can can happen, but nightmares or, you know, underlying stress you have to, address. But we all don't remember our dreams. It's just like this thing that goes away. I want to remember in the morning for a few minutes and then it's gone. The brain resets. So it's healthy. Children have, night terrors, in the early part of their sleep. And the adults when the REM sleep is more consolidated, can have, more vivid dreams. So it's nothing, wrong, but it is very vivid. Or if you're like hallucinating, you might have, sleep disorder or underlying stress or trauma, which you probably need to address.
Okay, but not remembering dreams isn't necessarily a sign of anything at all.
That's perfect. That's what we are built to be.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Bijoy, I've got one final question that I end every podcast episode with, which is this. What would you say is the best mistake that you've ever made? Or to ask the question another way, perhaps, something that initially you thought was a disaster, but it turned out to be quite fortuitous.
In the line of sleep or in my life?
In your life, whatever direction you want to take the question.
So, I have four medical specialties. One of my real passion was the intensive care unit. I really love that, being an intensive care unit doctor. I did that for 25 years. So my sleep was on the back burner. I could never sleep.
I can imagine.
Yeah, all the other patients. So to see me was 6 months. And I finally decided, 3 years ago to just come out. I wish I had done this earlier, start my own clinic. And, it has taken me 2.5 years to write this book. I wish I could spread this message earlier. But, there's a time for everything. I'm fully on now. So that's the only the change that I've done. I wish I had made this earlier.
Yeah, I love it. Fantastic. Bijoy, thank you so much for joining me and my listeners on the show today. As I said at the start, it's a topic that's really close to my heart as someone who's struggled to sleep over the years and an absolute champion of helping and encouraging people to sleep well, both so they can perform at work and hopefully live a long and healthy life. And I know for sure some of the tips that you've shared, your Sleep Now acronym, will really, really help people. Before we wrap up, let me just ask you again to give us the details of the new book and how and where people can get hold of a copy.
Yeah, it's everywhere. This is the title, Nobody's Sleeping, The 7 Proven Sleep Strategies. It's available on all the popular websites. Amazon's got it everywhere, Barnes & Noble, all over the place. I saw it today. And also have for people looking online, I have the Sleep Fix Academy, and I'm also on many social media platforms as Dr. Sleep Fix. I give a lot of videos. I'm even on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. If you want, I always do some funny videos to help people sleep better. So that's it. Sleep well, be well, and let's have a healthy, happy life for everyone.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Take care.
Thank you so much, Ben.
So there you have it, folks. That was episode 164 of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening, but most importantly, as always, I hope there were some practical things that you can take away and do as a result. Maybe for you, maybe for your friends, colleagues, your team at work, who knows? Perhaps you can go away and become a sleep champion for those around you. Remember, if you did enjoy this episode and the subject matter, do go and check out episode 47 featuring Professor Greg Wells via the show notes. And whilst you're there, do also make sure you grab a copy of my optimal sleep timeline. As I say, it's worked wonders for me and for many of my leadership mentoring clients. Thanks for tuning in. And if you have got a couple of minutes before you head off to whatever you're doing next, then I'd be incredibly grateful if you could just give me a quick rating and review of the show. It really does help and enable me and my team to continue bringing you this free resource. Take care, look after yourself, and until next time, lead on.